there, everybody. Welcome to The Principal Entrepreneur. I'm your host and author of the upcoming book, How to Be a Great Principal, Jonathan Royce. This is episode 77 of The Principal Entrepreneur, where we support educational leaders with strategies and suggestions that answer the question, how do I become a great principal? I also interview principals, school, and educational leaders just like me and you and discuss their areas of expertise and how they overcome the challenges within schools. In today's episode, we're talking with educational consultant Mrs. Janelle McLaughlin. She has 15 years of experience in the trenches and has experience as a curriculum director. She's taken those skills and now does consulting work and professional development with districts across the Midwest. Her expertise, among other things, are technology integration and social media practice. We'll get some tips in her areas of expertise in a few minutes, but before we do, we'll get into her origin story and how she caught the education bug. Mrs. McLaughlin, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So how did you get into education?
Well, it's kind of the old cliche that I have always loved kids. And on top of that cliche, I'll add that my mother was an elementary teacher. And so I grew up having a mom that was available all the time that I needed her, but she also worked full-time. And I always knew that I wanted to work, and as I kind of went through different ideas of what I wanted to do in high school, I kept coming back to elementary education, and that was the perfect fit for me. And so I ended up teaching mostly in the primary grades for 14 years before I became the district curriculum director. And I did that for 3 years and absolutely loved that role as well.
So you had a parent modeling what it looked like to be a teacher, so you didn't have that, you know, one interaction with a particular teacher that kind of sparked that interest. It was just every day, this is what mom does?
I guess. I mean, I definitely had those favorite teachers in my past that shaped who I was as a learner, but I also was constantly working with kids, all through growing up, either at church or my little cousins or my younger brother. And I just always loved the teaching and learning relationship. And then I also knew that I was always going to be a mother at some point, and I wanted a job that would allow me to be a full-time employee, but also a very present mother to my own children.
That's one of the differences, I guess, between me as a male teacher and then my wife who also works. They're just, in reality, you would think that there is some division of labor, but my wife does everything and I just work.
So
she does, you know, she does that, and I'm wondering if you're the same, where she works and then she comes home and she's mom, and she's never, there's never a down time.
That is true most of the time. That is, my husband definitely takes on his own roles and responsibilities, but I would say the majority of parenting falls onto me.
Yeah. I don't know how good that is or how progressive, but it's kind of how it is. In my household. When you look back on your educational piece as a curriculum director or as a teacher, what was your biggest challenge and learning moment in that arena?
You know, my biggest challenge as a teacher, and they're going to be a little bit different, but as a teacher, my biggest challenge was always trying to help kids beyond what they experienced in my classroom. So I live and work in a very small town, and so you pretty much get to know the home lives of the children in your class pretty easily. And my heart would break for the kids that just were living in poverty or living in a, you know, neglecting kind of situation, or even just beyond that, they just didn't have parents that could or would take the time to learn about their schoolwork on top of meeting their basic needs. And so it was always hard to try to separate that as a classroom teacher. You know, you can't take all those kids home as much as you want to. So I would say my biggest challenge there was just not being able to solve all the problems that I wanted to.
Right.
As a curriculum director and now as an educational consultant, my challenge is the same, and that's working with people who don't want my help, because that happens. There are teachers or administrators in every district that are change averse. So anytime I'm coming in, either as a curriculum director or as a consultant, there's usually some type of change involved. And so just trying to work through that foundational phase where I'm trying to establish credibility and build relationships with them, that's always the first phase. And then just working to overcome that is continuing to build that relationship.
Right.
Throughout any means possible. And then if it is going to be where I'm working with these teachers long-term or administrators long-term that really are very much closed to that idea, I try to take the smallest tweak possible and help push them through that growth, and so that the change doesn't seem overwhelming to them. So it's really about meeting them where they are and taking them one step further, which I guess is what we do as classroom teachers as well.
Right. So when you're thinking about those experiences as a curriculum director and as a consultant, are there one or two go-to techniques that you use to build that credibility and that trust between yourself and, you know, these teachers that are like, oh, another PD, hooray.
Right. Fortunately, normally through my consulting, I get to work with the same group of people multiple times throughout a school year. So I get that repeated FaceTime and the email collaboration in between. So it's all about building those relationships. Like I mentioned before, it all comes back to that. So I find out what their learning styles are. I find out more about their personalities. And it's really about investing time in talking to each one of them. And you get to... I don't know, you get a feel for personalities pretty quickly. One particular teacher that I've worked with this past year was not open to coaching, and I do a lot of job-embedded coaching because she already just thought that she was doing phenomenal things. And she was a good teacher, but I think everybody can always improve in our craft, you know. So what I had to do is constantly praise what she was doing.
Right.
And then just kind of casually say, have you ever thought about trying this? Or, hey, let's do this for next time and just see how it works, because I think it would fit great with what you're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about building confidence, because even if they act like the most confident people, there's usually a lot of insecurities underlying. You can't find those if you don't take the time to build the relationship first.
Right. Is there a particular skill set that translated from your role as a curriculum director and as an educator that lent itself to the educational consulting piece?
I mean, I think there's a lot of personal skill sets that I have just as a person. Like, I'm an extrovert, so it's easy for me to talk to people and to get to know their personalities and to really care about building those relationships. As an educator and as a curriculum director, the experience I gained just from being in front of a group, preparing a lesson plan, you know, organizing materials, you have to do all of those things as an educational consultant as well. I led a lot of the professional development in our district when I was the curriculum director, and so that was the first step in transferring what I did as an elementary teacher into adult learning and the processes that are similar and different. And so then that has led into making what I do as a consultant easier as well.
Right. So if you were going to take those challenges and boil those experiences down to a single one or two nuggets that you took away from those experiences, what would that be?
I'm going to sound like a broken record, but just taking time to build those real relationships, because the mutual trust is the key to any kind of growth or change. If you don't have the trust and the relationship, then you might as well give up on doing anything productive.
Yeah, and I think that's true, and it's not really, I wouldn't say a broken record. I'd say that's just is what it is when it comes to teaching, period. Anybody, that relationship matters. If you want anybody to learn anything, they got to know that you're there for them and not necessarily mm-hmm. there for yourself.
Right.
So you have some expertise in technology and social media practices, and you've done lots of PD across your state and across the districts. What are some of the most common things that you see that schools should be looking at either down the road or they should have in place right now as technology continues to enter our lives?
Well, I'm a huge proponent for technology integration. I mean, it's in our world and it's not going away. So I don't think that we can keep ignoring that as educators. What I often have found are devices bought and passed out to teachers and students with no real training or professional learning that's provided. And so usually I'll be brought in for that at some point. So it's always best when they bring in us to do training and consulting, coaching work on the front end.
Before everybody gets really frustrated?
Right, exactly. And I think it's even better when they consult people from the outside to help lead that strategic planning and visioning process. It's really easy to get locked into just what you're doing in your district, and that outside view can be so important in just making that change happen. But one of the things that I see that is a roadblock every time in any change initiative, not just tech integration, but if there's not clear expectations and constant communication from the leadership, then those initiatives, anything that you're implementing or integrating, is not going to be carried out to fidelity. If students, teachers, parents, building level principals, you know, on up, if they don't know what is expected, then they can't pull that off at their level, whichever level that may be. So then I also love it when there's consistency throughout the district. So, for instance, with tech integration, if there's going to be a learning management system, pick one for the district. I'm all for student choice, and I'm all for teacher choice where it's appropriate. When it comes to a learning management system, there needs to be one that's chosen for the district so that if you have migrant students that are moving from school to school, they don't have to learn a new LMS every time they move. Or if you have a parent who has students in multiple schools within the district, they only have to learn one in order to help their students succeed at home. There's multiple reasons why picking one is great. But consistency at every level helps just everything be more successful when you're implementing technology.
When you're talking about learning management systems, what are you talking about?
Okay, so some popular ones would be Canvas. Another one, Google Classroom, which is at a different level than Canvas. But those are two that are the most popular. Edmodo, Moodle, Blackboard. Those are some of the ones that I've seen in schools.
All right. I wasn't sure if you were talking about like what the teachers use when they're entering grades in PowerSchool and those kind of things, or what.
So. And I call those more student management systems. So those are more like managing their data, whereas a learning management system is how they can distribute assignments or materials, resources, quizzes, syllabus, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Any of those types of materials that they would have used to have to copy, print out, and pass out, they now can push all through one platform online.
How have you seen principals, and you know, you talked about consistency throughout the district, and then principals and upper admin needing to be a part of the change. How often do you have principals as part of that PD that you give?
Not often enough, Jonathan. And I think that. I know as a former administrator, it's very difficult to give time up for that. However, if it's something important for your staff, it's something important for you. So I would say the majority of the professional learning experiences I get to lead are teachers only, the majority. There is one particular school that I got to work with in Texas recently, and I was working through their professional learning communities. So I would go do the same professional development like 5 or 6 times a day.
Right.
So I would do this. Okay. Their building principal came to every single one. Now, he didn't need to hear my training 6 times. He was going to show his teachers that he thought what they were learning was important.
Right.
And the culture in that school is one of the best that I've experienced. And I've been in lots of schools. And to this day, I tell them when I go there that that's my favorite school to work in, and it's the truth. And they know that that's the truth because I make sure they know that I'm not just saying that line. But a big part of it is because of what that principal has done to build his own learning and making it visible to his to his teachers.
Is there an age where you get more pushback, or are teachers pretty consistent across the board in terms of learning new things and that type of thing?
You know, I typically get pushback from older teachers, but it's usually them saying something like, I'm too old to learn this stuff. And I'll have older teachers who pick it up faster than young teachers. So I never let them use that as a crutch. I think that's more of an excuse than really an actual issue.
Right.
So, yeah, I do see that. But like I said, I have teachers that are a year away from retirement that dive in head first when it comes to tech integration. And then I've worked with teachers fresh out of college that have no idea what the cloud is. And so I've had to train them on how to move everything over into OneDrive or Google Drive or Dropbox, you know. So there are divides no matter where you are, and I think age is just an excuse most of the time.
Is there a particular platform that you find more convenient than another?
I love Google Drive. I'm a huge Google fan because it's free and it's easy. And I think that it's extremely intuitive for the user, so for teachers and kids. And then the other reason I'm a huge fan is because of how massive Google is, all of these other websites and applications are working to integrate with Google because they want to be part of that. So then it just makes all these other resources open up and easier to use for you if you're using Google Drive as your main platform in your district. It's just, in my mind, way easier than some of the others out there.
Google Drive has the writing process piece. It has forms. You know, which three do you think would be the easiest for them to start on?
Well, I think what I would do was show them the collaborative nature of everything in Google Drive. So anybody's going to be able to open up a Google Doc and be able to use it as a word processing form. Like, even our oldest teachers have done word processing by now. So
right.
That is pretty simple no matter what platform you're going on. But what I would want to show them is how using a Google Doc can help them collaborate and communicate easier with their colleagues or with their students. And so showing them how to use that sharing piece and how to collaborate within the same document. And so from there, then we would just talk about what their needs are. If they have a need for a new formative assessment tool, then I would introduce Google Forms. If they're wanting to increase creativity in their class, then I would show them Google Slides and how you can do so much more with it beyond just doing a PowerPoint presentation. So I really like to focus around the needs instead of the tool. So if they have a communication collaboration need, I'm going to show them what works for that.
Right.
If they have a creativity and innovation need, then I'll introduce them to some ideas for that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yep. So you're solving the problem as opposed to dumping something on them that they may or may not need.
Exactly.
I like it. So you've been in education. You've been, you know, all over the place. In terms of seeing different schools, you mentioned culture in Texas. If you were going to give advice to a principal in their first couple of years, specifically around technology and social media, what would be your advice?
Well, my first bit of advice would be to find reasons to love your job every single day. because I think it gets overwhelming at different levels of leadership with everything that's on your plate. So you've got to step back and take time to remember why you became an educator in the first place. And hopefully that's to empower young people in whatever capacity, you know. So one of the ways that we reach young people today is through social media. I mean, that's their world right now. So if we want to stay relevant to the kids that we're impacting, then we've got to live in their world a little bit. So some of the best, most involved principals I've seen are active in their students' classrooms, where they're going in and they're taking pictures and they're tweeting out what the teacher is doing and or what the students are learning and leading in that classroom. I think Twitter is probably one of the easiest platforms for principals to kind of jump into to tell the story of their school, because it doesn't require a lot of time. You know, it's a minimal platform as far as that goes. So finding ways to tell the story of their school through what their students and teachers are doing, just empowering that through the positive that they're sharing with the world. That would be a huge piece of advice. And then, of course, building those relationships with all their stakeholders and making sure that their interactions are genuine.
I want to touch here on the social media piece for a second.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When I first started in education, we got a lot of pushback for even being on social media, whether it was MySpace or Facebook. You know, you don't want to be on there because you might get your picture taken doing this or that, and there was a strong push to limit your social media. And now, as you know, we move forward 5, 6, 8 years, I feel like we're on the other side of that, where it's time to get on Facebook, show what, you know, just like you were saying, is tell the story of your school through, you know, either Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or one of those social media. How do you, when you're talking about protecting yourself, what are your views on that?
Well, I do a whole training on digital citizenship, so I do think that we have to be very careful with just digital security and educating ourselves so that then we can educate the people we work with as well. I always tell educators that your personal Facebook is not what you use to tell the story of your school. You need to start a school page. Same with Twitter. I only use Twitter for my professional life. If people want to follow me personally for Twitter, then that's fine, but they're only going to see professional stuff on my Twitter. I keep those separated. I know one particular teacher who has 3 different Twitter accounts. He had a personal one. He had a class one that he used for specific class assignments. And then, and also for, like, students were allowed to follow him on that one, and he would follow them back. And
right.
Then he had a professional, a professional one where he connected with other educators on it.
Right.
And he flat out told the students, like, if you follow me on one of these other two, I will not follow you back, just so you know. I will only follow you for my teacher one. And he did a really good job at keeping those separated. And I think that that's probably the easiest way for us to maintain our own digital safety, is just to keep it very separated. And I would be very leery about communicating through, like, direct messaging with students on social media.
Right. That sounds like a a scary place to be.
Right.
I like that idea of separate accounts. Have you got any pushback from districts that are more entrenched in traditional thinking when it comes to social media or those types of things, when it comes to, you know, you're basically, social media is the new marketing tool that's fairly inexpensive to use if you want to promote your school.
Right. And I think the more that you show the awesome things happening in your school or your district, the better it is for everyone. Yes, I have had pushback from people. And that, again, is where you just have to meet them where they are and try to encourage them to take one more little step forward. And then I've worked in districts where they have all of social media blocked. And that is sad to me because there's so much powerful learning that can happen through social media. So not only are they not using it for marketing and promotion of their district, but they're also prohibiting their students and teachers from some great professional and educational learning through it as well.
Right. Yeah, we're not super close to it, but we're just now kind of we recently got a new communications director, and we're just now kind of tiptoeing into the Twitter sphere.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the district piece. I appreciate your time. I got one last question here.
Sure.
What are a couple of books that have had the greatest impact on you as an educational leader?
Well, I love to read, and so it's kind of hard to narrow it down to two books. I guess the first one, and this is going to maybe sound like a strange choice, but this book is called The Other Wes Moore, One Name, Two Fates, and it's by a gentleman named Wes Moore. And it's basically a biography and an autobiography combined about these two young African-American men who grew up blocks away from each other in New York, and one ended up on death row and the other ended up as a Fulbright scholar. And the one that wrote the book is the Fulbright scholar, and he tells the story of seeing this article in the newspaper about the one that was on death row, and it caused him to want to go and meet this man who shared his name. And they had so many similarities as far as their just growing up years. But the difference was a teacher that invested in the one and the teachers that wrote off the other. And that impacted me so much as an educator, just thinking they were both raised by single moms. They were both raised in lower income neighborhoods. You know, they had so many similarities, and it was the impact of an educator that made all the difference from a life in prison and a life as a successful citizen. And so I just remember reading it several years ago and thinking every teacher needs to read this book to really realize the influence they have on a daily basis. So that's the first one. And on a much different hand, I really look up to Eric Scheniger as a professional role model. And his first book was called Digital Leadership. And that was and is one of my favorite books as far as going back to that, what you brought up earlier. It's a great segue in telling the story of your school and your district. And that whole book basically is saying it's the leader's role in the schools, in the classrooms, in the district to tell the story of what's going on, and also to be the digital leader so that then they can help shape how students are using online resources to guide their learning and not just for entertainment purposes. So a lot of great professional advice and kind of how-tos in that book. And then the first one is a lot more about the emotional impact
right.
that we have.
Both those themes there kind of are, they're you. Those two books, just what you, when you described the first, that idea of helping and the impact of an educator. And then the digital piece, the digital leadership piece, I'm not surprised that those are your choices with your description of those two, just based on where you're at right now. So it's funny how the books that we read can define or reinforce who we think we are.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things we do as teachers, and we try to get books into the hands of our students to help them figure out who they are. So, that's why reading is important.
Yes, couldn't agree more.
So thanks so much for your time. If people want to reach out to you and learn more about your consulting practice, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I am a big believer in social media. They can find me on Twitter. My website is innovativeeducationsolutions.net, or always I'm open to email too, which is just janelle.mclaughlin@gmail.com.
McLaughlin, not McLaughlin.
That's all right. Everybody says it McLaughlin. That's fine.
Well, I apologize, and I'll say it at some point.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I really do appreciate your time. I know you got to get back to your work, and I'm just a distraction, so I really appreciate it.
I appreciate talking to you. Thanks for taking the time, Jonathan.
Once again, that was Mrs. Janelle McLaughlin. To summarize a few of her important points, she mentioned the importance of relationships and noted that you have to meet them, in this case, teachers and administrators, where they are and take them one step further. Point number two, mutual trust is key to any type of growth or change. And number three, if it's something important for staff, it's something important for you. And in this case, she was talking about the need to be with the staff when new initiatives are being rolled out. And number three, if it's something important for staff, it's something important for you. And in this case, she was talking about the need to be with the staff when new initiatives are being rolled out. If you want them to be rolled out with fidelity. A couple key pieces of advice with regards to social media included, if we as administrators want to stay relevant to the kids that we're impacting, that we got to live in their world. And she also suggested using Twitter because it's one of the easiest ways to get our stories out. Two books she mentioned that have had a profound impact on her are The Other Westmore, One Name, Two Fates, and the other one is Digital Leadership. You can find links to those on the corresponding blog post at theprincipalentrepreneur.com. That's it. As a reminder, if you are a principal, make sure you check out the new grant scholarship available that honors the hard work that you put in on a daily basis, K-12 principals. Again, you can go to theprincipalentrepreneur.com and click on grant applications, and you can find the information that you need there. For more short articles and tips that support educational leaders, you can check out my blog at theprincipalentrepreneur.com and howtobeagreatprincipal.com. Both those URLs go to the same spot. You can also check out my upcoming new book, How to Be a Great Principal, 36 Shared Leadership Success Strategies. If you're an auditory learner, you are in the right spot, and you can download other podcasts of The Principal Entrepreneur on Podomatic or iTunes. To join the podcast as a guest, you can email me at jonathanroyce@theprincipalentrepreneur.com. Finally, I am part of a community of supportive principals. Please join our private Facebook group. Again, just type in The Principal Entrepreneur in the Facebook search bar and ask to join the group. That is it for today. Thanks for listening to The Principal Entrepreneur.